I never really liked Joni Mitchell.
It wasn't the one that you gave to me that night down south between the trailers. Not the early one that you can wish upon. Not the northern one that guides in the sailors. Oh, star bright, you've got the loving that I like, all right. Turn this crazy bird around. I shouldn't have gone.
I can begrudgingly admire her for her fierce individuality and sense of experimentation, and for the door she opened for other musicians, especially women.
You got the touch so gentle and sweet, but you got that look so critical. Now I can't talk to you, baby, I get so weak. Sometimes I think love is just mythical. Up there's the heavens, down there's the town. Blackness everywhere and little light shine. Oh,
but I'm put off by her meandering singing style, her obtuse lyrics, and her too earnest folkiness.
Oh, star bright, you got the loving that I like, all right. Turn this crazy bird around, I shouldn't have got on this flight tonight.
John Lennon once reportedly told her early in her career that she could make a fortune if she'd only throw some strings into her arrangements. Of course, she refused, and made a fortune anyway.
I'm drinking sweet champagne. The headphones up high, can't numb you out, can't drum you out of my mind. They're playing.
Her fans are legion and rabid, but she leaves me pretty cold, with two notable exceptions.
And ice cream castles in the air, and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun.
Both Sides Now, which is probably her best and best known single song, having been covered by everybody from Judy Collins to Leonard Nimoy, no, really, is the very first song I remember hearing. I was around 4 or 5 and lying on the back seat of a car being driven somewhere in Seattle at night, well before child safety laws took all the fun out of being a kid in a car. I was looking up through the back window at the sky and at the neon signs that would swim into view and disappear. It was a magical moment, looking up through the man-made stars to the real ones beyond, watching the colored lights drip and flow through the windows. I didn't really understand the lyrics, but those images of ice cream castles and feather canyons crystallized with the gorgeous flowing colors I was watching into a perfect moment, my first, and one that remains my earliest concrete memory. Later, at preschool, I tried to dredge up the tune and found I could keep it in my head as long as I didn't try to sing it out loud. Once I opened my mouth and started singing, the tune would get warped and twisted, and, frightened, it would run away until I shut up and sat still for a minute. And then it would return.
Thank you.
It was about that time that I had this great dream about being on a ship with a friend of mine. There were pirates and gumballs and music and colors, and it was fantastic. I came rushing into school to talk to him about it, and was shocked to realize that he hadn't really been there, that it was just in my imagination. It was my first realization that there was stuff in my head that was for me alone and that I would never be able to get out and share with anybody. And then there's River. From the one great Joni Mitchell album I've heard, the iconic Blue. First and foremost, it's one of the best sad Christmas songs I've ever heard.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. So I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
With all the frenzied joy to the world and all that forced goodwill towards men, it's easy to lose sight of how sad the holidays can be sometimes, and how much worse it is to be feeling blue when there's all this hysterical forced happiness around. Starting with a somber and slowed musical quote from Jingle Bells, River quickly drifts into longing and self-pity and regret, feelings which are simultaneously ignored and heightened during the Christmas rush. It's a perfect evocation of the holiday alienation that can occur, where everybody else seems to be enjoying themselves and getting into the spirit, while you sit inside yourself, watching everybody else with longing and contempt.
He tried hard to help me, you know, he put me at ease, and he loved me so not, he made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away. So hard to handle. I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I gone and lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I would teach my feet to
It's a beautifully sad song that doesn't end so much as just fade away into nothing, the repeated piano notes trickling down into icy oblivion.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer, singing songs of joy and peace. I wish I had a river I could skate away.
Stylistically, River is cut from the same deep indigo cloth as the rest of Blue. A heartbreaking album, the songs weep with simple beauty and tragedy. Even the happier songs have a melancholy edge, while the sad ones pull you into a quiet pool of despair. But it isn't suicidal, angry, hopeless despair. It's that quiet despair that leaves you exhausted, sitting on the couch in twilight, pondering your stupid life and the holes you've cut into it, too sad to cry, too tired to sleep.
Everybody's saying that hell's the hippest way to go. Well, I don't think so, but I'm gonna take a look around at the blue.
Joni Mitchell was reportedly so sad during the recording of this album that she'd lock herself in the control room and just cry, squeezing tears onto the tape.
Blue, here is a shell for you. Inside you'll hear a sigh, a foggy lullaby. There is your song from me.
After ascending the heights of my senior year at the Interlochen Arts Academy, a step down was inevitable. How far down that step was to be was unknown at the time, but it was a drop that I'm still recovering from in many ways. At any rate, I went to the University of Chicago to while away my academic purgatory. Things didn't go well from the very beginning. My second day there, I contracted a whiz-bang, that's the doctor's term, of a urinary tract infection that caused me to dramatically pass out in the middle of my first class. Then, while recovering from that, I took a couple of extra-strength Tylenol and got into bed and turned on the radio just in time to hear an emergency announcement that tainted Tylenol had killed several people in the Chicago area and you should throw your Tylenol away. That was an exciting hour while I waited to see if the cyanide was going to kick in or whether I'd survive. My roommate turned out to be a homophobic homosexual who fell hopelessly in love with me and spent the entire semester trying to crowbar his way into some intimacy while I spent much of my energy trying to keep him at bay. And all of this while, I was immersed in one of the country's most demanding academic colleges. And what little interest I had maintained in the world of academic achievement was quickly being sucked down the drain, leaving me scared and tired and bewildered. So when Thanksgiving rolled around, I was ready for a break. hadn't initially planned on going home for vacation, but when some Interlaken friends showed up in a van and threatened me with physical and psychological abuse if I didn't come with them, I gladly tossed my plans aside and jumped into the van for the 6-hour drive. It was a bittersweet vacation, a wonderful respite, but tragically short. I got to spend some time with the people that meant the most to me. I saw my mom and Frank. I spent a little time with Eric and Bob. I was appreciated for who I was instead of ostracized because of it. Perhaps the bitterest of this sweet respite was the chance to see Jennifer. Jennifer, a year younger, had been power flirting with me for my last semester at Interlaken. Although I loved the attention, I largely ignored her advances, as I already had a girlfriend, thank you very much. At the end of the year, on the cusp of oblivion, my resolve broke and I found myself making out with her on the sacred shores of my lake. The following summer, we wrote mad love letters to each other, the bulk of which still sit in a box in the bottom drawer of my office, where they have remained untouched for 20 years. The safety of distance fanned our desires, and we burned up pages and pages of paper with our longing. Because she wasn't actually there, and because we didn't really have a relationship, she became the perfect woman. Everything I wanted, and nothing I didn't. Too far from home to go for the long Thanksgiving weekend, she was going to be staying at the house of one of her teachers, Mr. K. The chance to actually see her in person was exhilarating and terrifying, and I thought of little else on the drive up. After fulfilling my other obligations, I finally drove over one night to see her. Mr. K welcomed me in, and the three of us sat around drinking hot chocolate until the dreaded and hoped-for moment when he excused himself. Jennifer put a tape on the stereo, and we moved over to the couch to talk, but we were too shy to really talk to each other. After all those pages of purple passion had been exchanged, we found ourselves speechless. So, after a few awkward moments, Jennifer pulled out a notebook, and we continued our courtship in cursive, where we were more comfortable. During the times she was writing, I listened to the music coming from the stereo. I immediately recognized the voice as Joni Mitchell's, but for some reason it didn't irritate me like it usually did. In fact, I suddenly found a warmth and an understanding and a truth in her songs that I hadn't heard before.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
I asked Jennifer what we were listening to. Blue, she scribbled on the pad. While she wrote, River played and poured itself deep into my soul. I found my throat closing and I blinked back tears, wishing I had my own river to skate away on. After a few flirty pages, we were able to break through and actually touch each other and share a few holy moments in each other's arms. The next night, we went for a long walk down by the lake. Steel gray snowflakes floated through the air and disappeared into the black lake.
He tried hard to help me, you know. He put me at ease, and he loved me so naughty, made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river.
While we strolled along the beach, chastely holding hands, she admitted that she felt our relationship was more romantic than sexual. And I reluctantly agreed, being too shy and scared to wade into those dark carnal waters without a guide. Without saying as much, I think we were both let down. Having had a fiery long-distance romance with a perfect woman, I was disappointed with the flesh-and-blood reality, warts and all. I'm sure she felt the same way about me, so I walked her back to Mr. K's, kissed her goodnight and goodbye, and drove home. My perfect love buried in the snow that was drifting along the side of the road.
Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I made my baby say goodbye.
In the morning, I glumly boarded a bus bound for Chicago and settled deep into my skin, watching the world blur by. Filled with dread, I was headed back into the belly of the beast that was sucking the life force out of me. My confidence, my sense of self, my happiness, my desire were all disappearing into the bleak gray landscape of the Windy City. Another illusion broken, I tied on my skates, taught my feet to fly, and disappeared down that river so long.